This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome to our viewers in the West. We start with breaking news, a late development in a day-long manhunt for a career criminal who shot six people earlier today in Maryland and Delaware, killing three and setting a massive police dragnet into motion along the East Coast. The violence began in a small town in northern Maryland, the victims all apparently known to the shooter. Our Tom Costello has some late details now.
It started just before 9 this morning.
Multiple subjects saying the shooter has a granite business.
Shots rang out at Advanced Granite Solutions in Edgewood, Maryland, about 30 miles north of Baltimore. Police say 37-year-old Rady Prince shot five employees with a handgun before fleeing. Police were on the scene within 4 minutes and found three of the five had already died. The two survivors are in critical condition.
There's an individual out there on the loose who committed, you know, one of the most heinous acts we've ever seen in our county. Certainly, we consider him armed and dangerous.
Police say Rady Prince, who worked at the company for the last 4 months, had an extensive criminal background. 42 arrests in Delaware alone, including 15 felony convictions. He was last seen driving a 2008 black GMC Acadia with Delaware plates. Nearly 2 hours later, another shooting, this one in Delaware. Police in Wilmington say the victim and shooter knew each other. Police chased the suspect's car, but lost it.
The last time that we've seen this individual today was earlier this morning.
For much of the day, police fanned out across the I-95 corridor from Washington, D.C. to New Jersey, watching highway exits and toll booth cameras, searching for Prince. Police don't yet have a motive for either shooting, but the father of one employee tells our NBC station in Baltimore, Prince was a loose cannon. And we have some very late-breaking developments. At about 4:30 p.m. Pacific time, the suspect was found in Delaware, in Glasgow, Delaware. He was taken into custody after a short police chase and without incident, we're told. Police also emphasized he was always targeting people he knew. This was not a series of random attacks. Lester?
All right, Tom Costello, thank you. Now to the public back and forth that has injected politics into something normally seen as deeply personal and solemn. The controversy over what was or wasn't said during President Trump's condolence call to the widow of a fallen soldier, one of four U.S. service members killed in action in Niger this month. The president denying claims from a Democratic congresswoman who says she overheard the conversation in which she says he disrespected that American hero and his family. NBC's Peter Alexander has the latest.
Tonight, honor and sacrifice for families mourning loved ones killed in Niger, including Sergeant LeDavid Johnson, a father of two, whose unborn child will never meet his dad, Brian Black, a Green Beret medic, and Jeremiah Johnson, who loved riding motorcycles. The Wright family has served in the armed forces for 200 years. 29-year-old Dustin, the first to die in the line of duty.
The kindest, the most loving person you'd ever met, and that's the amazing thing about him.
The Pentagon tonight still investigating how the low-risk mission was blindsided, a deadly ambush by fighters affiliated with ISIS. During the attack, Johnson becoming separated from the unit, his body found by Nigerian troops 2 days later. Tonight, his family's pain compounded, they say, by the president's words. President Trump denying a Democratic congresswoman's claim he disrespected Johnson during a call to his widow.
I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman, did not say what the congresswoman said.
That congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, standing by her account of the call, heard on speakerphone.
He said, well, I guess you knew he something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up, but I guess it hurts anyway.
The president blasting Wilson's story as totally fabricated, adding, I have proof. That proof, not a recording, but according to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, aides in the room, including Chief of Staff John Kelly, the president earlier invoking the memory of Kelly's son, a Marine, killed in Afghanistan.
And you could ask General Kelly, did he get a call from Obama?
Can you describe how General Kelly feels about it?
I think that General Kelly is disgusted by the way that this has been politicized and that the focus has become on the process and not the fact that American lives were lost.
Tonight, the White House confirms President Trump recently sent a check for $25,000 to another grieving military father after his son, a soldier, was killed in Afghanistan in June. Officials here say it was a generous gesture made privately by the president. Tonight, that father tells NBC News that he's yet to receive the payment. Lester?
Peter Alexander tonight, thank you. And there is wavering this evening from the White House on a health care deal, all but sinking a bipartisan effort to stabilize Obamacare insurance markets. Just yesterday, the president said he was open to the measure. Today, he called federal subsidies to help low-income Americans pay out-of-pocket costs a bailout to insurance companies. Experts say the uncertainty could result in higher premiums on the Obamacare exchanges. Tonight, we are hearing for the first time from the hero security guard, the first person to encounter the gunman inside the Mandalay Bay Hotel in Las Vegas, sounding the alarm about a shooter on the loose even after he was shot and wounded. NBC's Joe Fryer now with his story.
Jesus Campos is breaking 2.5 weeks of silence, speaking with Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm doing better each day.
The Mandalay Bay security guard says before the Las Vegas mass shooting, he was called to check on a door alarm near gunman Stephen Paddock's 32nd floor suite. Campos took the stairs, but the door to the floor wouldn't open, so he took a different route.
There was a metal bracket holding the door in place. That's just out of the ordinary.
Campos says he called for an engineer, then started walking down the hallway when a barrage of gunfire came from Paddock's room.
At first, I took cover. I felt the burning sensation. I went to go lift my pant leg up, and I saw the blood.
After Campos radioed for help, engineer Stephen Shuck showed up, unaware what was happening.
And that's when Jesus, he leaned out, and he said, take cover, take cover, and yelled at me. And within milliseconds, if he didn't say that, I would have got hit.
At one point, a female guest came out of a different room.
And I told her to go back inside. It wasn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators say Paddock had rigged the hallway with cameras. Seconds later, he opened fire on the music concert, killing 58 and injuring more than 500. DeGeneres called Campos a hero.
You, being shot in the leg, saved so many people's lives.
Announcing a sponsor is donating $25,000 to the victim's fund in his name. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
In Houston today, hundreds of residents lined up to receive disaster relief more than 7 weeks after Hurricane Harvey hit. Harvey and other recent storms caused tens of billions in damage, including an unprecedented number of flooded vehicles. Now experts warn some of those cars may be for sale in your state, and the damage may never be disclosed to you. But NBC News national investigative correspondent Jeff Rossin tells you how to keep from getting scammed in tonight's Rossin Reports.
Tonight, the numbers are still rising, from Hurricane Harvey to Hurricane Irma. More than 637,000 cars flooded out and damaged.
And some of those cars ended up here in this flooded car graveyard. Just how many? Let's show you. We have our NBC drone up. We're going to bring you up and give you some perspective. Believe it or not, this is just a fraction of the flooded out cars from Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. These are only the people that turn their cars into their insurance companies. But around here, over 60% of the people don't have any car insurance. And experts say they could try to resell these flooded cars on the open market across the country without ever telling you there's a problem.
It's obvious from all the dirt and debris, this car has been in a major flood, but somebody could come along and for a couple $1,000s, clean it up, sell it to some unsuspecting buyer, and everything's great until they're driving it down the road in a few weeks, and then the electronics go out, and boom, you got a bomb on your hands.
Roger Morris is with the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
That's how high the flood water came up on this vehicle.
That's the water line.
It got the engine, and it also got the anti-lock brakes.
So how can you tell? Because chances are a seller would clean that up. How can you tell? What should I look for if I'm buying a used car?
Well, one will be on the lookout for things like condensation. Here, see, this car's
in the lights.
It's had water in there. Yeah.
He says there are other clues, too, that a car was underwater, like rust or corrosion on the engine, brand new upholstery in a used car, or sand and dirt in unusual places, like deep under the seats. And here's another big tip.
So if you're looking to buy a used car, take the VIN number from that car, run it through our database, VINCheck, at www.nicb.org. It's free, and if that car has been flooded and was insured, it'll show up in there.
But if it wasn't insured,
buyer beware.
Because for every car in this graveyard, experts say there are thousands more, dangerous and on the market. Jeff Rossin, NBC News, Baytown, Texas.
That's a lot of cars and some important information tonight. It was another record day on Wall Street, the Dow closing up 160 points and closing over 23,000 for the first time, finishing the day at 23,157. Still ahead, silent epidemic, a virus most often linked to cancer in women, now spreading at an alarming rate among men, too. Why you may not know you have it until it's too late. Also, police officers striking a chord with kids in their community. Our new series, Those Who Serve. We'll be back. We're back now with a warning about what doctors call a silent epidemic among men. The HPV virus is most often linked with cancer in women. But a new study shows an alarming rise in HPV-related cancers among men, too, especially oral cancer. And the symptoms are often silent. NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres has more on the risk factors and what you can do to prevent it.
When married, father of three, Jason Mendelson, felt a strange lump on his neck a few years ago, he got it checked out right away.
When I got diagnosed with stage 4 HPV-related oral cancer, my life stopped. All of a sudden, I had to worry about who was going to take care of my wife and kids.
Jason's cancer was caused by HPV, the human papillomavirus. Most commonly linked to cervical cancer in women, a new study now reveals men are increasingly infected with the virus. More than 11 million men have oral HPV, and like Jason, don't even know it.
When we have HPV infections, whether they're genital infections or whether they're infections in the throat, the infection itself with the virus really doesn't cause symptoms.
In some people, the virus can progress to oral cancer years later. Risk factors for oral HPV may include the number of sexual partners, performing oral sex, and smoking cigarettes or marijuana. Jason has since recovered from his cancer and is determined to raise awareness about the virus.
Let me tell you why I love your mother.
He's gotten his kids vaccinated and wants everyone to know it is preventable. Doctors say boys and girls should be vaccinated starting at about 11 years old. They should get two doses at least 6 months apart. Those who get the shot after age 14 need three doses. But after age 26, doctors say it's too late.
And let's talk about adults right now who think they may have come in contact with this virus. Anything they can do.
And Lester, unlike pap smears for cervical cancer, there is no good test for oral HPV right now. So prevention is the best course of action, meaning quitting smoking and limiting sexual partners.
All right, Dr. Torres, thanks very much. Coming up, the major safety recall impacting America's best-selling line of vehicles. A manhunt is underway for suspects caught on dramatic surveillance video. It shows a group of men carjacking a woman and her 11-month-old niece at gunpoint in broad daylight in Houston this week. Police believe the suspects are also linked to a shooting nearby that killed one man and injured another. One suspect was captured. The other three are at large. Tonight, Ford says it's recalling over a million F-150s from model years 2015 through 2017. And 2017 Super Duty vehicles because of a potential problem with doors, making them either unable to open or close or appear closed when they're not actually latched. The company says dealers will install the fix. Blasting off soon to a toy store near you, Lego's new Women of NASA playsets honoring female space pioneers like astronauts Sally Ride and Mae Jemison, computer scientist Margaret Hamilton, and astronomer Nancy Grace Roman. The idea came from a fan who works for MIT. Lego launched it after it received 10,000 votes. When we come back, above and beyond, police connecting with kids through their shared love of music. Our new series, Those Who Serve, is coming up next. Finally tonight, a story that is literally about the brotherhood of police officers, siblings in this case, with over 30 years of law enforcement experience between them, who brushed off some talents they thought they had put behind them to help some New Orleans high schools' kids march to success. It's part of our new series of stories. I look forward to sharing with you about Those Who Serve.
Before he ever walked a beat, Officer James Kerr learned how to keep a beat.
I'm in high school, college. I started in middle school and stuck with it.
And so when asked by a friend to help out the Cash Strap Band program at McDonough 35 Senior High School, this New Orleans policeman stepped in line.
When does your day start and when does it end?
Generally 6:25 in the morning when I report to work, and it ends roughly 7-ish.
He came to our practice one time with his uniform. I was like, you're a police officer? He was like, yes, I am.
So is Mr. Gregg, color guard instructor, also known as Sergeant Greg Johnson of the New Orleans Police. He is also James's brother.
I had a kid last week say, is Mr. Gregg really your brother? Yeah, It's really my brother.
What drives their passion is getting the kids to college.
For a lot of these kids, they have the talent and ability to have a college pay them to be there.
And as cops, they have even more to teach.
We sit down and talk to them about real life issues, things that are going on in the world, like whenever you encounter the police, how to interact with the police.
Band practice is after school, a period these lawmen know can be risky for teens.
Most of the crime that's occurring are from kids as high school ages. So if we could take these kids and keep them with us as long as we can, it gives them a better chance at succeeding and getting in any type of trouble.
This band of brothers leading, protecting, and building trust.
Everybody take care of everybody. If you need something, he got you.
Yeah, we're like a family. Yeah. It's one big family.
Do you get attached to the kids?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. As much as you would like not to, you do.
If you know someone who serves, whether in law enforcement, military, medicine, or any other capacity, and is doing something extraordinary that you think we should know about, we would love to hear from you on our Facebook page. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Wednesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.